This podcast is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network, and it's also proud to be from Texas. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is the 2B2 podcast.
Oh, yeah.
That's
the biggest problem of being a collector is having the space.
Yeah.
Is in finding that space. And now, which I'm sure you're getting into also, where I've got to like pick and choose what things that I get. Mm-hmm. You know, I started getting those guys up there, the Hot Toys and Sideshow stuff. And beforehand, I was, you know, completely all in on that 6-inch line and buying two of every figure.
The black line?
Yeah. And I was buying two of every figure, and now it's like, well, I like the new movies. There hasn't, like, honestly, I've liked all the new movies, but I will still get the 6-inch original trilogy figures, but I'm not going to be getting the new movie figures just because I don't have the space for it. I would love to get them. And so I'm kind of picking and choosing on the new movie figures that I'm getting because, like, I've got Masquerade, you know, I've got, like, from TFA and Rogue One, because, I freaking loved Rogue One, but that's, you know, like I tell everybody, it touched my heartstrings, so, okay, so I'm going to kick us off before we totally get sidetracked, because we're sitting in the Star Wars room. We've been recording now for a minute. That's kind of how we like to roll on the 2BT.
All right, cool.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to 2BT. I am David.
I'm Adam.
And if you notice, that's a different voice. That's not a Michael, and that's not a Steven. That is an Adam. And Adam is a old friend of mine, old friend of mine, because we're both old. But I've known him for quite a few years. Adam was a guitar player of mine way back in the day, and like we were both kind of like the nerdy guys in the band. Whereas mine was always Star Wars, Adam's was video games. And so We're gonna start bringing you guys a new bonus episode, and it's just gonna kind of be, I don't really know what our recording schedule is gonna be like. Maybe once a month, maybe just kind of like whenever we feel like it, really. But you know, I'll let Adam talk and give it a little bit of background of himself. Like, when did you start collecting video games?
When I actually started was around the late 90s. So you're looking at 98, 99.
Okay,
so that was, for those of us who've been collecting video games.
Yeah.
For that period of time, that was sort of the highlight, because that's when you had your N64, your PlayStation. We were moving from cartridges to discs.
Yeah.
So, when you were doing that, cartridges got dirt cheap. So, you could go buy up a bunch of, like, Nintendo games for, like, $10 and have, like, 20 games and have really good games in there.
Yeah.
Now the market's completely different, and it's not the same thing.
But oh,
it's,
God, yeah.
But,
It's like the Nintendo market is a lot like the vintage Star Wars market. Whereas before the movies came out, the new movies came out, I could go and I could get, you know, basically any vintage Star Wars figure in good, decent shape for $10 to $15. Now, like, I was talking just a minute ago, like, that Princess Leia there was $60, and she didn't even have a blasted gun. If I wanted to get a gun for it was going to cost me another $60. And it's just because, you know, the new movies are coming out and the market's now hot for that old material or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And so what drove your lust or love for collecting the old video games? Just like wanting to go back and revisit those old Nintendo games and old Atari games and stuff like that?
Well, I had two periods of time, essentially. So you had the early 90s stuff, the late 90s stuff. And that was just from, like, oh, I always wanted this game, and now I can get it for a couple bucks.
Yeah.
And so that's how that started. So, like, I have, like, the original NES Double Dragon box, instructions, all of that. I think I picked it up for, like, $3.
Oh, wow.
No one wanted it.
Yeah.
And it was just taking up space. But now, and then, sort of as time went by, about 4 years ago, I went back into, like, I had that lull period. I don't know if you've had this in your collecting at any point in time where you, like, kind of stop.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm just going to stop. So I stopped for a long time and got into other things and stuff like that. And then about 4 years ago, I got back into going, oh, yeah, there's that game out there. I really liked playing that. I want to go find that again.
Yeah.
And so from a previous collection, then I started buying things again about 4 years ago, and now I'm somewhere around like 2,000 games and 15 consoles and...
Yeah, so...
And a headache for space later, trying to, like, you know, share the space with the wife and go, like, well, this is where this goes.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
over
yeah.
there.
Yeah, I know all too well, but as in, like, with San's wife, because I would collect a little bit of Star Wars when I was married, but, like, I'd say my Star Wars collection really kind of took over my life whenever I got divorced, because it's like, I'm free to do whatever I want to with my money now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, no, I don't have anybody to answer to but the bank. go ahead and let everybody know real quick, you have a YouTube channel, right, that you do yours on? Or
yeah, you can find me over at Retro Reprise on YouTube, and I cover... what I cover a lot of these days is what are called clone consoles.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's an original Nintendo. You can go out and get that, and that's a great system. And I love that system, but going out and finding it and the pieces and everything to work can be a pain for people. So, there's companies now, Retrobit and Hyperkin are two of the biggest ones, and they make clone consoles. They essentially make one single console that you can play Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis. They do a bunch of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's kind of – so I kind of talk about that as I hit stuff and get hoarse on you already. I'm on the – like I talk on the phone all day at my day job, so like my voice goes out all the time.
Yeah.
But – but yeah, it's it like right now I'm talking about clone consoles. That's kind of where my passion is with stuff right now, because I really find it interesting that there's modern day companies that are making these old school consoles that'll go play your cartridges.
Oh yeah, yeah. I see the benefit in those. I want the old consoles just to say that I have them, but I totally see the benefit in those, because then you don't have, you know, 15, 16 consoles sitting around just taking up a lot of space. And with those, I mean, as you look at my collection over here, I can't say much about taking up a lot of space, because that's, you know, obvious. But I see where those clone consoles are a heck of a lot of beneficial to the collector.
Because, well, there's a couple reasons. Like, I have two of them. I have, from Retrobit, I have a Super Retro Trio.
Okay.
That I have hooked up to an old school tube television.
Yeah.
And the reason why I have that, now I have an original Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis. But I play on that.
Okay. Is it just to preserve the other consoles?
Yeah, that's just for preserving the other consoles. Now, the problem with a lot of clone consoles is that there are certain games that won't play on them.
Okay.
Just because of the way that it's designed. Most clone consoles are designed on what's called a system on a chip, which is basically they took the chipset that was in, like, we'll use Nintendo because that's the example we've been running with.
Yeah.
So Nintendo has these chips that are really specific. One's for just the graphics. One's for just the sound. One's for just the CPU to run whatever it needs to run.
Yeah.
Well, with a clone console, they'll take all of those different chips and basically combine it into one chip.
Okay.
And when you do that, you can get most of everything to work. But there are certain things that won't go with it. So a notorious game for NES that has trouble running on a lot of clone consoles is Castlevania 3.
Oh.
Because it's got a cheater chip in it for the characters that switch out.
Oh, okay.
So you can't really, depending on the console, of course, but most clone consoles, systems on a chip, don't really play that game.
Yeah.
So you still want to have an original Nintendo to be able to play that. Well, since I'm a Castlevania nut, that's like one of my favorite games.
Yeah.
So I got to play that. I have to play that on original Nintendo.
Yeah, so the cheater chip that you're talking about, is that actually something like to kind of, is that just to help you switch out the characters? Is that actually something built into the game to kind of help you cheat?
It's like built in.
The whole Game Genie thing back in the day or whatever.
Oh, no. When I say cheater chip, so a lot of these games came out and had capability of going like, well, Nintendo was an 8-bit console.
Yeah.
But if you needed something with a little bit more memory or something to help it out, they would build a game with the chip in
it. Oh, okay.
So, like, a good example of this that people might remember would be Star Fox.
Oh, yeah.
Star Fox had the Super FX chip. That was, yeah, do a barrel barrel roll. Yeah, so the original Star Fox that came out for the Super Nintendo had the Super FX chip. That was a marketing ploy along with everything else that they were doing with it.
Okay.
And that gave the Nintendo, or the Super Nintendo, a 16-bit console that only did two 2D games.
Yeah.
It gave it the capability of playing a 3D game.
Oh, okay.
So Super Nintendo is more known for it, but there were also Nintendo games that had these little chips in them that...
Yeah. Well, and it's like the N64 had that whole thing. I think it was like the Donkey Kong Country that you could buy the game, and it had that little cube thing that you plugged into the game that expanded the...
It's a little bit different, but it's the same. That's a memory expansion.
Okay.
And so, yeah, Star Fox 64 was one of those games. Donkey Kong Country probably had that as well.
Yeah.
And that was where they were coming in with all these, like, weird modular bits. So you had, like, a memory card that you could put in the controller. You had the Rumble Pack. These are things that we kind of take for granted these days because they're already built into the system. Yeah. Or your system has a hard drive
freaking
in it.
Rumble Packs. I forgot about Rumble Packs.
Rumble Pack. I think I've got one somewhere. I don't even use it. I actually turn off Rumble
these
days. I don't even
it just mess drives with you it. Up the wall?
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, I was watching The Wizard the other day, and I'd never watched it before.
It's so bad.
I mean, like, I just remember watching the kid, and he was playing a game with, it was Malibu Grand Prix or Gran Turismo or something like that. I can't remember what game it was. The old, like, just...
It's probably Rad Racer.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was, but he's playing with the power glove. Yeah. And he's like he's like actually driving. I was like, that glove did not work that good.
No. I've never had one. That's a big collector's item now, just for its... Because it was sort of... People consider that the prelude to, like, the Wii.
Yeah.
You know, they were doing motion controls early on, but it was such a crap product. So, but yeah, the power glove and Lucas. It's so bad. I love the power glove. It's so bad.
I did have... Do you have one? Because I was going to ask you if you had it in, like, the briefcase.
No.
Open it up.
That's one of those collectibles, because, like, we were talking about this earlier. I don't know if we have that recorded or not, where you have to sort of pick and choose what you want.
Yeah.
So, where my collection is just for things that I really want to play, or I did play.
Yeah.
And I'm a game player. I don't have a collection because I want to collect. I have a collection because I like to play these games.
Yeah.
And so there are people out there that just collect to collect. They just grab whatever they can. I don't have the space for that. I don't think I have the patience for it either, because my stuff is about, you know, like, playing the games, enjoying them, and then I have sort of like a historical side of it that I really like.
Well, yeah.
And then along with the games and doing the collecting and all that stuff, there's cleaning. So I clean my games too. So I've got bit drivers, take the cartridges apart.
Yeah. You know, get the Brasso out and
start scrubbing, man. I've got about 30 games I still need to clean right now.
Yeah. It's like these guys right up here, man. Like, I hate dusting. Like, and you know, all my vintage figures, you know, they're all pretty well because I've cleaned them all recently, but you know, to clean all those vintage figures and stuff like that, man, it's a daunting task, especially when you're trying to keep up with the weapons and, you know, cause you don't want to lose a weapon because it's going to cost you like another $10 just to get the blasted weapon or whatever. It's just stupid. It's absolutely ridiculous.
What do you do for like dust on the shoulders and head? Like,
toothbrush really? And Dawn. Yeah.
How many figures? Do you know how many figures you have? Or at least vintage line?
Yeah, I do have a spreadsheet.
Yeah, I had to start doing that with my games.
Yeah, I do have a spreadsheet, and it has the condition of what they are in, and whether or not if I want to replace it or not, you know. So,
okay.
I think out of...
I built a database.
Yeah.
I started so I could just, like, key in my game, and then I can pull up a spreadsheet later on if I want to. But I actually went through and programmed a database on my computer so I could do that.
I got all sorts of excited because the other day Hasbro, well, I guess it's been out for a little bit now, but Hasbro released a app for your phone, and it's what is it called? Hasbro Pulse. And basically, what you can do is you can take an item, you scan it and it adds it to your inventory. And I was like, I need to do that at some point in time because this is, I need to do inventory. My latest thing has been restoring the old vehicles or whatever, like my Millennium Falcon over here. Like, I don't know if I ever sent you the before and after photos of that
thing. Oh, no, I haven't seen that.
Yeah.
There was a video that I was doing where I was doing some game hunting, and the most questions I got in that video, it was down at one of the dirt malls.
Yeah.
When there were two dirt malls.
Yeah, well, before the Great Fire of 2018.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'm sad. There's a Anakin statue that will never be returned.
What, you bought the Anakin statue?
No, I didn't. Okay. No, I didn't buy it. Just it was always there, man.
I forgot about that. They had the Anakin statue,
full size. It was a full size.
Yeah, from the Pepsi released those back whenever the Phantom Menace came out.
Yeah,
yeah. And it was, I want to say they had the Jar Jar one there also, maybe.
I didn't see the Jar Jar one, but I remember Anakin was always like, because
right there next to the staircase.
Yeah, you went up the staircase and then you had a hard right angle, but you had sort of a wider area.
Yeah.
Sort of a platform, I guess. And then Anakin was always just standing there in his pod racing gear.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I used to go in there. I loved going in. I loved going into
the dirt. It was really wizard.
Yeah. I love going into those dirt malls and like, I would have days where I'm sure you do the same thing where I like to call it, you know, finding Star Wars in odd places. And I'd just pick like a random store. And usually I'd always pick like the dirt malls up there on the square and go into those dirt malls and check those out or whatever. And you'd always find something in there. And it would be, you know, you might find a vintage X-Wing fighter. And it looked like the one that I had whenever I was a kid where like the S-foils are missing. It doesn't have any of the guns. The canopy's gone and they've got like $200 on it. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that
is like $5, guys, if that much, because that's just used as a base for somebody to build off of because that's all worthless.
Yeah. That was the thing about the video because I'd passed by, I'd done I have to do covert video.
Yeah.
Stuff. So. I'm you know, passing my phone along.
Yeah.
Because I switch cameras on a lot of the stuff that I'm working with. And so I've got just using my phone because that's the less conspicuous
kind of thing. Yeah, the incognito way.
And I pass by, you know, a Millennium Falcon that's just been picked apart.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the comment on my videos, like, how much was that Millennium Falcon? I was like, dude, you don't want that.
Yeah, thing. Everybody thinks that they're going to send their kids to college with it. No, look at this. I got some old school Star Wars stuff.
Yeah.
I sent little Timmy through college with it. He's going to be a veterinarian one day.
Well, what I saw, have you seen, there's a toy sort of documentary series that's on Netflix.
Yeah, The Toys That Made Us?
Yes.
Yeah, dude.
And I had, I don't know if it was on that or what else I was watching, but I hadn't realized that,
Kenner had the Star Wars line.
Yeah, Kenner had the Star Wars line, but after Kenner kind of...
It was Hasbro, petered. Yeah.
So Hasbro had the vehicle molds,
yeah,
from what I understand.
Well, and Kenner always had the vehicle molds, yeah.
Well, when they absorbed Kenner,
yeah,
they had the vehicle molds. And the weird 90s, like, He-Man version of all the Star Wars figures were created just so they could sell the vehicles.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
And that was technically, that was still Kenner at that point in time, because Kenner's still around in the 90s. And so basically, like, the old Kenner Millennium Falcon that was released in the 90s, whenever they did the, you know, started back up the Star Wars line or whatever, is the same mold that they used for the Millennium Falcon from the 70s, like that one right there, except for like it had like this issue with the plastics, like the the gunner's chair and some stuff like that, and the loading bay, not the loading bay, but the docking ramp or whatever you want to call it. I can't think of the blasted name of it, technical name of it, but the pylons that came down for the boarding ramp. That's it. The boarding ramp, the pylons that came down for the boarding ramp and the gunner seat and stuff like that was made out of this really weird kind of gold plastic, and something about that plastic causes it to be really, really, really brittle. And I don't know if it's the dye inside the plastic or what.
Was this the reissues or the originals?
The reissues.
Oh, okay.
That was done in the 90s because they had these, and that's mine from whenever I was a kid back in the 70s or whatever, 70s, early 80s. And then they still had the molds for those, so they just redid them. And like you said, they were basically doing it just so they, you know, did those figures just so they could sell, vehicles again.
Yeah, and, but it was funny because the characters, a lot of the characters didn't fit in the vehicles.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. And those freaking, like, I always call them the He-Man line.
Yeah.
And, like, those He-Man lines, man, those were so bad. They're so bad. Like,
but it was very 90s.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, because everything was bigger, buffer, stronger, yeah. Tougher, whatever, you know?
It was extreme.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. So, looking back, man, what are some of your most favorite games? Or what are your favorite games that you own in your collection right now? What are some games that you want to own? Because I know you said you had, what, 2,000 games in
your collection? I got 2,000 games, man.
So how many out of the original, because what was the original Nintendo run, like 300 and...
700, around 750. Okay. I don't have the exact number, but we're looking at around a little over 700.
Okay, so how many of the Nintendo line do you have?
I have about 200.
Oh, okay, so you still have a long way to go.
I'm not trying to complete the collection. No, I do have a collection that I am trying to complete.
Dude. You can't not complete it.
No, I'm not going to complete it. Especially when there's games out there that are like $10,000. Oh, God, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, so those are those like special competition games, like the what was it? The
Now that I'm on the spot, I can't say it. I can't think of it.
I can't think of it.
There was basically a game that came out with the Power Pad, and it was originally like just track and field.
Yeah.
But there was a version of that game that I think Bandai was the company that released it initially. So what happened was Bandai came out with this athletic pad, and they had their game.
Okay.
And then Nintendo was like, that's a fantastic idea. Instead of us buying your, or instead of us making our own, we're just going to buy yours and reface it. And so they did their version of it. And so the original Bandai version had a very limited run.
Oh, okay.
And so that particular game goes for, I want to say, like, I've seen it go for something like $20,000
or something. Good God. Like that.
But there's always, and then we have a real bad, we call them bootlegs. Bootlegs. So we've gotten, especially more recently from China, there's like bootleg games, and it's turned into a thing in our industry. It's my industry, but it's in the industry of retro collecting where GameStop got involved with doing retro gaming.
Oh, okay.
And so there's some higher end, like Super Nintendo games where people will open up the game, swap out the card.
Yeah.
And then sell the game over, or just sell them a complete bootleg. And GameStop doesn't know. Like, they're supposed to, the facility's supposed to be in Grapevine or something like that.
Yeah.
That goes in, like, all the retro games that GameStop gets, it's supposed to go through that area in Grapevine where they're supposed to open the games and clean them. And they even had a video where people were wearing gloves, like, and cleaning them stuff. And it was supposed to be all this awesome stuff.
Yeah.
And it's, and, their bootlegs just fly through those things like there's nothing.
Really?
Yeah. And so you got to be real careful with what you're buying.
Yeah.
So.
And China's good at bootlegs.
Oh, yeah. I buy Chinese bootlegs because they have multi-cards. So that's another thing that I do.
Is it kind of like a multi-pass? Oh, man, some of my lights are burnt out.
Well, instead of having, like, one, like, you buy a game. Well, yeah. A multi-cart will have, like, I have one that's got 150 games on it. So yeah. I don't even have to go to my shelf to pull off the game to put in the console to play it. I just boot up my console with that game.
Oh, there you go. So it's kind of like Amazon Prime for your
yeah, pretty much. Console. Yeah, you can have like 150 games on that instead. Yeah. And so you're not having to like swap out your games or wear those out. And
yeah.
You can just keep your games clean and on the shelf. But it can't have all of them on there. So you still have your games to have access to and all that stuff. But
now, do you go crazy and get protectors and stuff like that for your games or anything like that? Besides like the normal dust covers or whatever, like what Nintendo used to sell and stuff.
That's one of my areas that I'm still trying to figure out. Because I had found a company that sold like a pallet of dust covers that you would have to break apart and build on your own and slip them on, but you could get a bunch of them for like $10.
So oh,
I was about to go do that. And I found this other company in China that was selling dust covers, and they had 50 for like $3. So I went and bought it, and then I get it in from eBay.
Yeah.
And they sold me 3 dust covers instead of, and even though it says like 50 dust covers, like a lot.
Yeah.
like, I wanted three lots of dust covers. They sold me three dust covers. So that's a big thing. Dust covers are kind of expensive when you think about it. This little slip, the little envelope slip that you put your Nintendo game in, they're $1 a piece.
That's ridiculous.
when you're sitting at like 200 games, that's $200.
Yeah.
So you've got to find. So that's the solution I'm trying to find right now is how to protect the games a little bit better. There is a company that does these multi cases.
Yeah.
That hold different games. Like you can this one case, you can either put a disc in it. Or you could put a Genesis cartridge or a Super Nintendo cartridge. It doesn't fit Nintendo games. So if you buy them, you have to actually like cut the molds in it to have it fit
really?
A Nintendo game.
There's a company, I can't think of the name of it because I've gone to them. I haven't bought anything from them, but I've gone to them to buy, looking for protection for my Black Series figures. Because it's a company that just does slip covers. Well, basically like a... Grab one of these guys real quick, like this. Granted, that's acrylic.
Yeah,
that's hardcore heavy duty.
This is like well, we have that in game collecting. We call it slabbing.
Oh, okay.
It's for most of us, we kind of look at it as pretty useless.
Yeah.
Now, in the games, it's useless.
Yeah.
In this case, where you have it in, like you have your Boba Fett kind of in a nice acrylic case, it's in there because that's the way you want to preserve it.
Oh, well, yeah. And it keeps it from getting shelf wear and blah, 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 blah.
But there's people that are running around slabbing brand new games like it's...
Why? Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, I guess I kind of understand it a little bit, but like with games and stuff, like I would figure those brand new games, you want to take them home and play them, right?
Yeah, most game collectors play the games.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't sure if they were doing crazy stuff like what I do, where I'll go out and buy two of the Black Series figures.
Some people will do that, depending on the game. I mean, there's obviously some series of games are going to be worth more than others, and you can sort of anticipate that that's going to have a value to it.
Yeah.
But for the most part, slabbing a game is not very conducive to what you're supposed to do with
it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, and it's like, technically, that case right there is you're able to open it. Granted, I wouldn't want to open it very much because I'd be afraid I'd break the case, and that case itself was like $16. It's almost as much as what the figure costs.
Oh, yeah. You know?
So it's like, for certain figures, it's feasible to do it because, you know, it's a high-priced figure or whatever, and it's like those behind you there that I've got on the wall, those are, you know, figure shield card protectors, basically. And it's for those, they're specifically made for those large size cards that they did for the 40th anniversary Star Wars, blah, 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 blah. And I want to say it's like 15 of them for like $80, you know, and it's like,
well, see, and again, that goes back to, these are on display.
Yeah.
And they're display, they're there to protect your display.
Yeah.
Slabbing a game makes no sense. So that's part of the problem with, but there are people who will go around and try to find games, and like I said, I'm a collector who likes to collect the games because I play the games.
Yeah.
But there are some people that are completionists. They'll go out and they'll buy a game, and then they'll go to a convention and find, you know, the box for it and the instruction booklet, and some of them will even sell, like, the little advertisement slips.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, there's people who go that far with it, and they'll go and buy the same kind of protector boxes for those. And
yeah,
for me, that's not really what I'd want to do.
Oh.
There's a thing called the, I think it's just called like the Case Project, where you can go buy those universal cases that I was talking about. And then they have a data sheet with each game on it. And each game will have a file set up to where you can just download the game case picture.
Yeah.
And so you can set your cases up sort of like a video rental store.
Okay.
And so I've really thought about that because the cases themselves, you can buy like 100 or 200 of them for like $50 or $60. It's really not bad. And these are good solid plastic cases.
Yeah.
And I've thought about doing that, but that's a lot of printing alone. When you go back to the printing, to get a high quality print, you're going to spend at least $1 per image.
Yeah.
And so that's where it gets into, like, well, do I want to do that? I'd rather have the dust cases that I just slip in and I can keep them raw on the shelf.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those things where you collect and you have these hard and fast rules of collecting, where it's like, what kind of collector am I going to be? Yeah. How is it? Am I here to play the games? Do I just want to look at them on a shelf?
Yeah.
What am I doing with these games? And what games am I going to collect?
And with game collecting, you figure that you want to play the games instead of just like, here, I have this on the shelf here, blah, blah, blah. Unless you have like a cheap bootleg version that you can play and then have the original game on display or whatever.
Yeah, you can do that. The problem with bootlegs is you have to be careful with them because these are things that are running electricity through them.
Oh, yeah.
So if they're not built correctly,
it's going to fry.
You could fry something.
Yeah.
So
or burn down your house.
Yeah. So you gotta really think about what it is you're wanting to do. Or you can, you know, there's emulation.
Yeah.
As somebody who does YouTube stuff, too, I can tell you the first comment in almost every video you're going to have is, why don't you just get a RetroPie? Like, I don't understand why you do all this.
Yeah.
Just get a RetroPie. And you're like, look, I know what a RetroPie is. I can build one. I know computers, it's fine.
Yeah, is that one of those cherry pie things or whatever that devil?
Well, it's a Raspberry Pi, okay, and then yeah, it's a Raspberry Pi. So it's a small, it's a computer board essentially, and you can go online and you can download Raspberry Pi, which is a GUI interface that you can add consoles to and put games on, and so you can actually have a nice little console, and and RetroPie or Raspberry Pi, you know, they're about $60, so they're not very expensive. You can either 3D print a case, or you can go buy a case that'll fit it. It's got a lot of outputs on it. You can do HDMI into your television.
Oh, wow.
It's got several USB ports, so you can pick out different controllers.
Yeah.
And you can set up a really nice home setup for all these different games. But the problem is when you're a retro collector, you start noticing things.
Yeah.
So there's a reason why I still play my old Nintendo on an old tube CRT television.
TV, yeah.
And
well, one is because the light gun doesn't work with the regular flat screen TV.
That's true. Yeah, you've got progressive scan, so light guns won't actually work on a progressive scan television. The other thing is the way that, and this is really nitpicky, and this won't affect some people. Some people won't even notice. They won't even care.
Yeah.
But if you've played these long enough, you've been around them long enough, you start to notice these weird little differences. Progressive scan is also something where some of the action games don't play right. You can't really play Mega Man with an original Nintendo hooked up to an HD television.
Okay.
Because the progressive scan is a bit slower. There's more processing going on so we can have a nice, clear, clean, great visual. But if you're doing that with old analog inputs, the television has to do more work.
Okay.
So when you press the button to jump or to fire something,
it's going
to
be delayed.
It's going to be delayed a little bit. And from what you're seeing on screen to what you're doing from the controller, you'll be missing jumps. You'll just think like, man, I guess I just suck at this game. And it turns out that no, it's just being played on a modern television that is slowing the signal down. And so your reaction time's always going to be off.
Yeah.
Because cycles are different. So,
okay. What I would really like to see happen, and I know it'll never happen, but I would love to see somebody bring back the retro Atari artwork that was done on those cases back in the day. Like, they just don't do, I love those cases. Like, I can sit there and look at that case art forever, man.
And that's the reason why I collect Atari stuff, because the box art for it. Now, I think you can go on to eBay and go buy posters of the box art.
Yeah.
Because those were as epic as the posters.
Oh, yeah.
And as movie posters back in those days. I mean, I think it was a different artist that was doing a lot of those. But,
Drew Struzan was doing a lot of the – I mean, like, you think of, like, the big-name movies from back in our childhood, like Raiders of the Lost Ark and things like that.
Original Star Wars.
But, I mean, Struzan didn't do the original Star Wars, but he did a lot of those movies from back in the day. And it's like – I think they said something about that he painted Harrison Ford like over 100 something times or whatever a freaking movie or whatever. But
the box art for stuff like Missile Command or the original Asteroids that was on the Atari stuff is gorgeous. And that it was shrunken down. It was funny because you had the Atari 2600 that had these games and you were almost buying the game based off of the artwork.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you got the game home and put it in the 2600...
It looked nothing like it.
Yeah. You almost had to, like, use your imagination to imagine that box art was what you were playing on the television. Yeah. And what was sad was when the 7800 came out, they still used a lot of the same type of artwork, or a lot of games got redone for the 7800, so they used the same box art.
Yeah.
But they made them black and silver. So it was essentially like a black and white print. Really? So you had all this great detail and all this amazing color just wiped out of those cartridges.
Really? Why did they do that? Well, I mean, why did they go to the black and white for the black and silver?
Well, it was the 7800. They needed to differentiate it from the 2600.
Oh, okay. So they just
because the 7800 played the 26. It was backwards compatible with 2600. Because okay. they had the 5200 between those consoles, and those were completely different cartridges.
Oh, okay.
So when the 7800 came out, the 7800 that I would love to get my hands on one. I don't have one.
Yeah.
Because that was the system that I grew up with. So part of my collecting tick is that while other kids were playing Nintendo,
yeah,
I had an Atari 7800. So, and...
y'all were the hipsters.
Yeah,
I like we this were... one because nobody has it so much.
Well, in my parents' defense, because yeah, I thought about it for years, because I remember asking my parents for a Nintendo and they got me an Atari. So they talked me into an Atari 7800.
Yeah.
And for a long time I thought, why?
Yeah.
I was almost mad about it.
Yeah.
And then I thought about it and... From my parents' standpoint, from a grown-up standpoint, not from a kid, but from a grown-up, there's this new company, Nintendo.
Oh,
we've never
yeah
heard of them. We don't know what they do. This doesn't sound like a thing. But Atari, we've played Pong, and we've played Combat, and
oh,
we know, God, yeah, and we've had an Atari 2600. We might as well get the upgrade to that, because Atari is a proven brand.
Yeah. Played but some River Raid.
River Raid, yeah.
River Raid was my favorite. River Raid and Combat was my favorite on.
I almost picked up a River Raid. It's going for about $15 right
oh,
now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to just go buy one just to get one. I've still got my old Atari 2600 just up in my parents' attic.
I'm like, oh, man.
We hooked it up not too long ago. We didn't have a way of hooking it up to the TV, but we hooked it up and turned the power on. The power light worked. And I was like, wow, it's getting power to it. I wonder if this thing... Still, I would like to hook it up at some point in time. I don't know how many adapters I'd have to get to hook it up, but... You know.
Well, it's the antenna in. It's an RF yeah in. So,
just find an old CRT somewhere.
Yeah, see, go find an old CRT. You could either buy one cheap, or if you keep an eye out on Craigslist or something, somebody will throw one out on the street yeah and be like, "Pick it up. I don't want to. It's 800 pounds. I don't want to move
yeah
it anymore."
Yeah, I had one of those that I sold not too long ago in a garage sale, and I couldn't sell it. And this lady came by, and she's like, "What are you going to do with that?" And I was like, "Well, I want to just give it away if I possibly can." And she's like, "Oh, okay, I'll send somebody to pick it up." And he came by in a car, and it was old. It's like 40-something inch Sony Vega. Like,
oh, if I knew you were getting rid of one, dude, I would have been like, "I'll take it."
Well, and see, I didn't even think about that. Now I'm kind of kicking myself that I should have kept it or whatever. But he came by in this little, like, you know, Pontiac, Grand Prix. That's what it was.
Tried to Grand load that Prix thing in there.
Yeah, and tried to get into the back seat, and I was like, "I can't get this into the back seat." And he was kind of like, you know, he just had this horrible look on his face. I guess he thought that he was going to get a free flat screen TV, like a free HD TV. You're not going to get a free HD TV from anybody, man. Like, let's just put it that way. Like, I've got, you know, three here in the house, and I'm not getting rid of any of them.
Yeah,
you know. But definitely not for free. I might would sell one to somebody. Like, I've got one that's a 720 that I'd let somebody have for $20 or something like that. But I'm not going to give it away to anybody for free. And then, like, he was, like, kind of, like, had this horrible look on his face the entire time. And he's like, "Well, if we can't get in there, I'll get the truck and come back." And so he goes, takes off, and then never came back. And, like, I messaged a lady on Facebook a couple of times. I was like, "Is he going to come back and get this?" She's like, "Well, I don't think he wants it after he saw it." And I was like, "What, do you think he's going to get a free HD TV?" She's like, "Yeah, I think that's what he was expecting." I was like, "Yeah, no, you're all right." Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I mean, if I was going to give one away, I'd take it to, like, actual
Goodwill.
Whoa, hitting the microphone and stuff.
Yeah, I think
I've
done that
twice. Goodwill. I'd take it to other, like there's a place, you know, up in a little town north of here, and it's called the Crisis Center, to where it's actually for
okay
people in crisis.
Yeah.
And I would take it there before I would take it to Goodwill, just because Goodwill's in it for... Yeah, you know, they say they're nonprofit, but you know.
Yeah, if you think that Goodwill's nonprofit, you are really wrong. I hate to break it to you. So
yeah,
let me tell you from the game perspective.
I know, because I've gone in there and looked at Star Wars stuff, and they've got it in like a little shelf, and they're like, "You can bid on that if you want to." And I was like,
"And
yeah,
they
no
do the same with games, but that now they have electronics centers."
Really?
So I think there's one unknown definitely in Dallas, but there might be one in Fort Worth.
Oh, okay.
Where they have a good electronics.
Yeah.
Like maybe a kind of decent old laptop or game console, video games, anything like with the exception of like controllers or something like that.
Yeah.
They will ship them off to there. And so you can't go to a normal Goodwill anymore and maybe find a Dreamcast or an old PlayStation. They're getting shipped off to those electronic centers where people will know to go to those.
Really?
And buy them there. And they'll mark them up to prices you can get on eBay.
Yeah.
And so
it's just like,
it's 100% profit.
Yeah. Because
that's what people don't understand. Yeah. Like, If you go to dump off your old clothes or whatever to Goodwill, that's fine.
Yeah.
You're just looking for a place to dump your clothes. But if you think that you're helping society by giving stuff to Goodwill, you are very, very wrong.
Always get your receipt from Goodwill, I found out, because this year when I was doing my taxes, this is old man grown up talk. Like, because like I was doing my taxes. And
next up is budgets and how to budget for your collection.
Because I was doing my taxes and I had some receipts from Goodwill. And so I went through and was marketing. Like, oh wow, I was using TurboTax and like it gives you like, you know, the one that really upset me was because I took that old CRT TV, that Sony 42 inch blah blah blah, and turned it in, and I checked to make sure that I was clicking the right one, but it was like, oh well, I didn't click it because I didn't get a receipt for it. But yeah, it would have given me like a $250 for that TV on my taxes.
Oh, wow.
Or whatever. I was like, son of a— It's like, oh, dude, I should have done it.
Now that I'm married, I will never see my taxes ever again. I was so excited for our, because we had our first tax return thing that we were doing.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, well, I normally get about $1,000 back. I really want to go get a guitar because I haven't had a guitar for a couple of years. And I was like, I want to go get a 7-string and dink around on that.
Yeah.
And then my wife was like, well, since I pretty much own my own business,
we're not getting a return.
We're not getting a return. In fact, we'll probably owe, but I'll pay what we owe. And I'm like, you better.
That's whenever you go, I'm sorry, baby, but we're finally separate this year. Like,
can't you do that quarterly?
Right? Exactly. Just be like, I'm sorry, honey, but we're going to file separate just because, you know, I think it'll work out better that way. Yeah. Now, man, I was trying to think of old Atari games that I used to love to play. I loved River Raid. River Raid Missile Command was a lot of fun. And I can't remember the name of it, but we had this one game. Of course, you had the regular Atari joystick. And then in the other port, you had a little like keypad type thing that you plugged in. And it would, you could warp to different areas or whatever and select different weapons that you were shooting with or whatever. I cannot remember the name of that game. I keep wanting to call it Space Invaders, and I know it wasn't Space Invaders.
No, but I don't know what that game is, because we only had sort of the basics when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I'm still working on my Atari collection. We recently got an Atari at the Retropalooza, Retropalooza in Arlington.
Yeah.
I think we spent like $60. We walked away with like 20 games and an Atari.
Heck yeah, man.
Like a couple controllers, some paddles. I mean, it was great.
Yeah.
One of my favorite Atari games. I know I didn't get into my favorite Nintendo games, but one of my favorite Atari games, and I want to do this somewhere, is there's a 4-player game. God, I can't. It's slipped my mind again.
Yeah.
The name of it. Where each person basically had you take the, because the paddles on the old Atari, for people who don't know, for those of us who are not old enough to know what an Atari is, the paddles usually came in sets of two. And it just plugged into one port.
Yeah.
So you can get two sets of paddles, plug one in the one player and one in the two player. And you take, each person has a castle. Hmm. It's a 4-player Atari game.
Really?
And it's like Pong, where you have a paddle that you move sort of right angle to protect your castle.
Yeah.
And you bounce a ball between each other.
Oh, okay. Oh, I think I remember that.
And
I want to say I've played that before.
I've got a couple different versions of it.
Yeah.
I've got one on the Dreamcast that's really fun. But but the Atari, the original Atari one, it sounds like so much fun to have, like, you sit in front of your television, you got four people sitting there playing on an Atari console.
Everybody's sitting on the floor.
Yeah, sitting on the floor playing with their Atari console.
Yeah.
And, you protect your castle. when the ball breaks away from the walls and then hits the center of the castle, then that person's out.
Oh, okay.
But it's an amazing game. It's just a lot of fun.
Because I want to say I remember one where you played that and it kind of like chipped away at the other person's castle and like if there was like a thing in the middle of it or whatever. It's like chipped away at the other person's wall or whatnot.
I mean, a lot of those games, you got to remember.
Oh, that was a Star Wars game. They had an old Star Wars game that was, you had the lightsaber and the training remote, and you had to block the training remote.
There was that one. You know what? Did that one come out for Atari?
I want to say it was Atari. I remember the Empire Strikes Back one that was for Atari.
Yeah, and that one was like Defender, where you move back and forth, and you just shoot down AT-ATs.
It was so hard, dude. The game was so hard.
It gets a little rough.
Yeah.
Now, I've got that one. You know what? There might be, I think it was like Jedi Trainer or Jedi.
That's the one with the training ball.
Yeah. That's the one that you have the lightsabers. You move back and forth.
Yeah. And that might've been Nintendo, but I'm pretty sure that was Atari.
Well, it's an older game cause it's essentially just a stick that moves left and right.
Oh yeah. That's really all it was. And it was a stick that moved left and right and you had a bar down at the bottom. They had to protect, and whenever one of the blasts from the training remote would hit, then it would, you know, take away that piece of, you know, small little section, and then eventually, if you got too many hits in that one area, then it would hit you and kill you or whatever.
if that came out for Atari, I do need that one.
Yeah,
because I have the Empire Strikes Back. Then I have the Return of the Jedi one, which is where you fly the Millennium Falcon, you blast through a shield, and then. Shoot the Death Star, which is kind of boring.
Yeah.
It's like Yar's Revenge. Did you ever play Yar's Revenge?
No, I never played the Return of the Jedi one either. I didn't even know that they had a Return of the Jedi. You sent me a picture of it. You're like, this is what I picked up. And I was like, holy crap, I didn't even know that one
is the Star Wars arcade game. That's as far as my Atari collection is concerned, that's one of my prize pieces. It's not like Atari games are super expensive. But $30 for an Atari game when most games are about $2.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's a little pricey.
Yeah.
But I picked that up because I had to get it.
Well, yeah. And those old vector graphics and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, the arcade does the vector graphics. Atari does a very decent job of trying to mimic the arcade.
Okay.
That's one of those times where somebody had a little bit of passion behind what they were doing. Like, I gotta match this game.
Yeah, instead of just pumping out the Atari games like what they used to back in the day, there's like, actually took a little bit of time with this one.
And that's another reason why I like Atari is because when you think about modern day gaming and people have like game companies that they like and all of this stuff, that pretty much all started with the Atari.
Oh, yeah.
That was where it more or less came into the sort of the public view.
Yeah.
Because we got Activision. And Activision gave us, like, of course I'm blanking out on everything. Not Jungle Hunt, but Pitfall.
Pitfall, yeah.
So they came out with Pitfall. They had a bunch of other games. And so Activision really was the first kind of rock star game company that people knew about. And that came out of the Atari time frame. And Atari has a lot of, to me, again, more historical significance for stuff. We had the market crash of 82 and 83.
Yeah.
Part of that was because of Atari. You know, there was a lot, like, you had, it was a buildup of several things, but part of it was Atari's mentality towards making these games.
Yeah.
So at that time, you have to remember that when arcade games specifically first came out, everybody was playing them. Grandma, your grandpa, your parents.
My parents wouldn't give me quarters to play. We're not wasting money on that.
Yeah, I don't know how much of my parents' money I spent on video games. But, you know, in all fairness, I did, you know, chores and stuff, and I got $2 a week, and I'd blow it all on video games. But back in the day, when video games first came out, you know, it was like everybody was playing them. It wasn't just it kind of gets tossed aside as like, oh, that's guys play video games. It's a male dominated thing, whatever.
Yeah.
But when video games first came out, everybody was doing
it. Oh, yeah.
And over time, and when you look at like the time frame of Atari, we're looking at 77 to 83. When you look at it from, say, a toy standpoint, that's a decent run.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
that's a really good run for a toy company.
Yeah, for a toy company, having a toy line that lasts 4 years, 5 years is a really, really solid
one. Oh, yeah.
And when you think about how video games were thought about during that time frame, it's actually a really solid run. But part of the problem you had, like, arcades became places where your drug dealer was at.
Yeah.
They were kind of seedy and dark and, you know, smoky. And so so arcades developed a reputation. And then on the home console market, you had Atari. And one of the biggest, most popular, everybody attributes E.T. to being the game that, like, demolished video games. And E.T. was sort of like that one feather that you drop on the pile that causes everything to fall. E.T. was actually a pretty decent game. I remember playing it as a kid and just actually really enjoying the game and getting really close to, you never beat those games, but getting close to getting to the next level to where you have to do it faster or better.
See, that's one of those games I never knew that they made. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you here, but like, that's one of those games, again, like Return of the Jedi. I didn't know that they ever made it until later on. We always had an Atari, but we didn't have like the E.T. game. We didn't have the Return of the Jedi game or anything like that. Then I guess, you know, we kind of petered out on Atari, and then, you know, my parents got us the Nintendo, and we had the Nintendo.
Fancy Nintendo kids.
Yeah. Exactly.
While this kid was playing 7800, that's how he knows that exists.
We had the robot and the lag gun.
Oh, wow. So you guys had Rob and everybody.
Oh, yeah. Well, we actually had the gray gun, not the red gun. And I remember I used to kind of judge my friends on that, too.
Like, about how late they got their Nintendo. You got the orange blaster.
The orange blaster. You got the orange blaster. Ours is gray. It kind of looks like a real gun. So
yeah, it's close. It's like... Yeah, well, I've got Megatron.
Who changed into a 45 or something like that. It looked like an actual real gun.
Yeah, Megatron was great. There's not a whole lot of toy stuff that I collect. I did find over at Five Below.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever go into Five Below.
I do every once in a while because they'll have some hard to find Star Wars stuff in there that you're just
trying to get rid of.
Yeah.
I did that with Ghostbusters.
Oh, so
when
really?
They did the 2016 Ghostbusters, that whatever political stance you take, whatever.
Yeah.
It was a crap movie.
It was bad. That new Ghostbusters movie was horrible.
But they reissued a lot of original Ghostbusters stuff.
Yeah.
So I there's two things that I did. One was when that Ghostbusters movie came out, I went to Walmart and I went and found one of those. They have those boxes of sort of randomized toys. What do they call those? Blind bags.
Okay. Yeah.
Dude, I'm crashing. I have no idea why. Yeah. So they had blind bags.
Yeah.
But one of the blind bags, they were all like little squishy versions of the characters, but they had a Slimer.
Yeah.
And I went and tracked down the UPC and started digging through those bags until I found a Slimer, and I bought it, and I was like, yeah, I got a Slimer, which I have up at work.
Yeah.
But Five Below, I went there, and they had the original four.
Oh, wow.
Ghostbusters, $5 a piece.
No, so were those super detailed figures?
We're looking at what, 6-inch? About 6-inch.
6 to 8 inches, I think, is what they were. I remember seeing those and I wanted to get those, but they were always like $20-something a figure. And then
Five Below had two
of them.
Five Below had all four. And they had a shelf just stacked full of them.
Yeah.
I can't walk out without getting these, because Winston's my favorite Ghostbuster.
Yeah.
Because he was the dude. Like, he was just like, I'm an average guy. I'm not some weird scientist. And, you know, he's like, hey, if it gives me a paycheck, dude, I'll believe whatever you tell me. I don't care. And so, like, I got all of them. And then each one has like a Ghostbusters symbol that you can build from each piece,
like
the Marvel figures where you could build a figure if you buy them. And I got each one of them for $5 a piece.
Really?
I spent $20 and got all original four Ghostbusters, and they look fantastic.
Really?
I have no place to display them. But
did you ever play the newest Ghostbusters game that they released?
I played, what version of it did I have? I played the Wii version.
Oh, okay.
Which is awful.
Really?
So that game came out on the cusp of console generations.
Yeah.
So you have, believe it or not, it was out for PlayStation 2 and Wii. And so they're very cartoony characters.
Yeah.
But I think it's the Xbox 360 and PS3 version, they go with more of a realistic look.
Yeah.
It's the same storyline, but some stuff's been edited out of the earlier console generation because they just couldn't fit all the content in.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have the Wii version of it, so you can like throw a pro, so you can like carry your Wiimote around and shoot like a proton blast and stuff like that.
Yeah. See, I want to say I played it on a 360.
Oh, are you talking about the top down that's more like a dungeon crawler?
No, you're talking about the
one that's almost a continuation of the story of the Ghostbusters storyline.
It's almost a continuation of the Ghostbusters storyline. Okay. I can't remember, was that an FPS type thing? Like a
the Wii one sort of was.
Yeah, okay.
But the PlayStation 2 version, those two I think are very similar versions.
Yeah.
But the Xbox and the PlayStation version, or PlayStation 3 version, I think those were like a third-person shooter type.
Okay. See, I can remember.
You were sort of like a recruit or a cadet or something, yeah. And you were helping them out with stuff.
I want to say, like, I played a demo of it, but I never actually found the, like, entire whole game or something like that. Like, I can't. Part of me wants to say I almost got it on PS4, but I don't think that was right. It had to have been 360, but I never saw the actual full game, so I wasn't even sure if they actually made an entire game. I guess it was just like a demo that I played or what. And the demo was fun.
The game is really, I would highly, if you get a chance to go to like Game Exchange, go look for it because it is actually it's worth playing for the storyline alone.
Yeah.
The gameplay, like, and I don't know the 360 version because I don't have that one, but, it really was, like a let's follow through with the Ghostbusters, original Ghostbusters track of where things are going from. Because from what I had read about that was that that really was going to be a movie.
Yeah.
And things fell apart and then so they turned it into the game and then they got started on the like Ghostbusters Go to Hell script that never saw the light of day.
Yeah.
And then they did the reboot.
And I think all the whole issue behind that, I think might have been that Bill Murray just wouldn't do it or something like that. Or
yeah. I don't have any like hate or love for Bill Murray.
Yeah.
But like for anybody that was like, oh, well, Sony screwed Ghostbusters. They kind of did, but yeah. Bill Murray didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
And they even, from some of the stuff that I read from Dan Aykroyd, was that they even wrote a version of the movie where, like, he would just make a cameo as a ghost where Venkman was dead.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and just awesome. gave him, like, minimal screen time just so they could say, like, oh, well, here's the original four.
Yeah.
Let's go. And he wouldn't even do that.
Would have been awesome if they could have somehow incorporated his character, which was himself, in Zombieland. And have him show up as a ghost with the gunshot blast in the middle of the chest.
I mean, there's so much stuff they could have done, but somehow they managed to talk him into making a horrible cameo in the 2016 version of the
movie. I saw it. I did go see it because I love Ghostbusters, man. And it's not the fact that it was, you know, women that were in part of the roles. You know, to me, it was just the script was really bad, man.
Some of the jokes were just horrible.
Like, I just, you know, I kept waiting on that wah, wah, wah.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think one of the characters actually does that in, like, they're in, like, a subway station or something.
Oh, really?
Like, wah, wah.
Oh.
But there's so much. This has nothing to do with video games.
Yeah.
But part of the problem with that movie is that they're always talking. They're always doing something. You have to be somebody saying something on top of somebody else, and it's always going on. There's no like space to breathe and let a joke actually ride out.
Yeah.
But one of the characters actually does wah wah, and it would have been funny. But some other character just jumps in and starts talking on top of it.
Yeah.
And so you don't even like you barely even notice it. And you're just like, okay, all right.
Well, I think that's gonna wrap it up for us today because we're right at about an hour. We're just a little bit shy, but I'm gonna go ahead and call it because I'm kind of like you. I'm starting to power down pretty hardcore right now for some reason. So,
well, if you have me on again, I will get. I'll do a little bit more structure.
We'll get more into
collecting and space
like,
and stuff.
Yeah, this is more kind of like an introduction type thing and stuff like that. If you want to find more of Adam, you can find him on YouTube at Retro Reprise. Adam also has you. Twitter page, same thing.
Retro Reprise is Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff.
Yeah, I still haven't set up an Instagram.
I'm all branding, man.
You guys can, you know, go by nerdylegion.com, check out all the amounts of different podcasts that they have over there. Plus, you can go to nerdylegion.com/audible, sign up for a free book. Well, not sign up for a free book, but sign up for the free trial, get your free book. Like Michael said the other day, he got two free books. So, you know, go by and do that. Go check it out. I'm a big, huge proponent of audiobooks, man. Audiobooks, it's just great because you can just sit back, even if you're just sitting at home relaxing, you can just sit back, chill, and relax and listen to a book whenever you can't find anything good on TV.
Get yourself some Ready Player One. Yeah, get ready for the movie.
That book is so amazing. I love that book. Oh, I can't. Yeah, I cannot wait for that one. Ernest Cline, and he's the same guy that wrote Fanboys.
Yeah, and and it's Wesley Crusher narrates the audiobook.
And Wesley Crusher does Armada also, or Wheel Wheaton. Yeah,
yeah. Shut up, Wesley.
Yeah, have you read Armada yet?
No.
You would like Armada. You would really like Armada. It's very, as I like to tell people, it's very kind of like Last Starfighter crossed with War Games.
Okay.
And in fact, the kid's name, the main character's last name in Armada is Lightman. And so if you know anything about War Games, which was David Lightman.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's pretty awesome. So yeah. So, go by Nerdy Legion, go by iTunes, leave us a review. Please, please, please be kind if you do. But you can follow us on Twitter at 2BC. Or 2BC. Good God, I can't talk. Like I said, my
brain's powering down. That's some old school Denton music there.
Yeah, I know, right?
2BC, man.
Exactly. That's kind of like whenever Mike told me the name 2BT, and I was like, yeah, that's great, because I remember this band called 2BC that had this song that was called Break the Stage because they were the Two Big Crew, and, you know. And
I actually bought some of my music gear from some of the guys from there.
Yeah. And then, but anyways, you can go by Twitter, follow us, the number 2BT. Show as at 2BT show. Want to email us? Email us at 2BTshow@gmail.com. With that, I'm David.
I'm Adam.
2BT signing out.
Terrible.
That was pathetic. Boo.
Nerdy Legion.
NerdyLegion.com.